podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
We are live. It is the Anfield Wrap Live. It is Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons, Cam Rimmer and Rob Gutman. Taking my gestures on there, Rob. Nice to see. It's the enthusiasm and the energy of getting to talk about this magnificent Liverpool team, Rob. It's got me all carried away. You must be excited about Saturday. We're going to come on to talk about that. We were all buzzing off Tuesday and elsewhere. We've got a couple of little bits in this tour live. There's me talking to John Elledge after I've had a couple of drinks and John Gibbons with Becky Loy and Jabeda Khatoon from Blackfest as well. That is to come for us on tour live. But we are starting off with looking back to the Liverpool's game, Liverpool's performance against AC Milan. We've got Cam Rimmer with us, and he's only just got back from Milan. Do you reckon you now own the San Siro, Cam? Have you brought it back with you? Did you bring it in the plane?
Well, I'm currently winning 1-0 in terms of games I've seen there, and you know what we've won. So yeah, I would say I do own it. But yeah, no, it was a brilliant trip, and even though it was a dead rubber game, it was still like that excitement feel, you know, like on the day of the game and stuff, getting to go to San Siro here in the Champions
League
music.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, it looks phenomenal. It's an unbelievable structure.
Oh yeah, it's easily, hands down, the best ground I've ever been to. It was just unbelievable. And I know we were like up in the gods, and how long it took us to get to the top of there literally made Newcastle feel like nothing. Like, I'm never going to complain about Newcastle away ever again. But no, it was just brilliant couple of days. And yeah, it was just there. Fingers crossed we can get a good draw on Monday and we can do a roll again after Christmas.
It's the San Siro-ness of it all, John, was maybe a little bit that got missed. I think also around his selection for the manager as well, in that those players will have wanted to play in the San Siro. We've not had many San Siro opportunities, very few AC Milan opportunities, but not tons of San Siro opportunities. And I think, you know, we did the jokes about Nat Phillips getting to play in the San Siro beforehand, but put the jokes to one side. All those lads just got to go and play a game of football in the San Siro, and that matters.
Well, I've never known so many players talk about a stadium afterwards on social media. You know, normally it's a great win, talking about the performance and, you know, go through to the next round or whatever it is. But I saw five or six different players make a note of or make mention of playing in that ground and what a thrill it was and what an experience. And, you know, there's no in a ground's great, and I'm sure Cam is the same. You know, I was lucky enough to go, you know, in the 2000s when Torres scored, and you, there's no one, something greater than there's actually being in there and witness it and being part of it. And I think, to be fair, that's the case for Anfield sometimes when people come, isn't it? And when players play there or fans come there, you know, it's sort of, it exceeds expectations. There's not many things in football or indeed life that exceed expectations, but the San Siro does. And I think the players felt that, and it made the, you know, the occasion, you know, as Cam says there, you know, it could have been a nothing occasion really, but I think it sort of spiced it up a bit. It's AC Milan, which is glamour as well. And they were brilliant from minute one to minute 90. They were excellent and deserved winners.
Speaking of exceeding expectations, Rob Gutman's with us. Rob, there is a thing here where we wanted to call it a dead rubber, rightly, because it was for us. But then as the game sort of wore on, you and I were lucky enough to watch it together, and the last 10 or so, we were absolutely desperate to see those lads win that game. Absolutely desperate to see them win that game, because they'd come so far, weirdly, because the goal comes from sort of a nothing-y set piece. It sort of felt like they had a clean sheet to protect, and I know that's not the case, but the idea they keep them out in open play, they keep them out when they're under pressure. There was a real yearning to see that performance become a win.
Yes, I think for two reasons, really. One was the sense of completing the set by winning six straight games in a group stage and looking like serious and sending out a message that we're very serious contenders for this season's Champions League. But for me, as much as that was keeping our winning momentum going, and I think that's probably big for the manager as much more so than the getting the complete thing in the group. I think he's big on that sort of thing. We've now, I think I'm right in saying, won six straight football matches, haven't we, since the last international break, or since defeat at West Ham?
Yeah.
That's a fair little run developing here. It's four in the league, two in Europe. So I think from that point of view, it suddenly became important. Look, when we went one down, it was a bit of a, fuck it, shrug. You know, tonight's going to be what tonight's going to be, yeah?
Yeah.
But I think once we got back into it, once we found ourselves, I wouldn't quite say improbably in front, because it wasn't improbable, but I don't think we'd banked on taking that game by the scruff of the neck beforehand and winning it, because we thought we'd have such a scratch side out. But once victory was within our grasp and looked tangible, we did seem to suddenly invest quite a lot in it. And I think it's for the reasons I've just cited.
Yeah, it must have been the same being in the ground, Cam. Obviously, when you go to a game, you obviously want to see Liverpool win. But for me, it moved from wanting to see Liverpool win and thinking that would all be very lovely to all of a sudden, like I did have a sort of a mad moment at about 78 where I thought, yeah, I'd probably, you know, I'd have a conversation about giving a kidney to see this one over the line. It was a really weird little journey to go on as a supporter. As I say, in the past, it was a luxurious journey to go on, don't get me wrong, but it was a really weird little journey to go on.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was just like, you know, some of the subs we were making, like that really was like a second string team, wasn't it? But it's really strong and they can hold their own going forward now, especially, you know, with like Leicester coming up in the cup and stuff. But yeah, no, it was just one of them. Like, you would just want to see all of them players just get over the line, wasn't it? Because some of them now, can you imagine the confidence that's going to have on some of the players who, you know, are string players who in and around the first team, and especially like your Tyler Mortons and stuff, like they're just going to be on cloud nine now, aren't they? But it was good, but it was just brilliant to be in that position. Once I was going the grounds with my dad, and I was saying, normally the Liverpool of yesteryear, like we'd be saying, oh, we, like if we don't win tonight, we're out, sort of thing. We always seem to take it to like the very last game. Like I remember Salzburg a few years ago and stuff.
Yeah.
But going there, and we were like, you know, it was relaxed. But at the end, we were still wanting to do the 6 out of 6, which again is another brilliant record for us. And yeah, it was just a brilliant night, and it's something I'll stay with all them players forever.
So this thing, John, I think, and I think it is the key takeaway for the manager, really. It is, he's going to have, at the very least, a turnaround. He's got coming up. We've got the game at the weekend against Villa. Then there's a bit of a break to the Newcastle game. But then there's not much of a break to the Tottenham game. Then there's the Leicester game, which is a League Cup game. And then he's going to have Leeds on the 26th. And then he's got Leicester about sort of 56 hours after the kickoff of the Leeds game on that night. And what it gives him is the idea that he can play with options, that he can blend this a little bit, that it doesn't have to be one strong team and one weak team, nor does it have to be the idea that he's worrying about one or two, that he makes two go, maybe a couple of plays he might not want to see go twice in such a quick turnaround time. I think it's fascinating for him that he suddenly presented himself with this, you know, and he's been presented with this, I can rely on these boys. I can get something out of all of them. They can all play with each other. And I think that's what he was looking to get from the game in the San Siro, and it's what he's got.
Yeah, I think that's really fair, Neil. And I think, you know, you can look at certain games and think, oh, is that the one we make changes for? But when Jürgen looks at it, he'll probably think, you know, I want to be sort of constantly making changes and, you know, but keeping us just as strong. And, you know, the squad has looked good. The much maligned squad of Liverpool, Def FC and all that have looked pretty decent and have shown themselves to be good. And to be fair, we've seen little bits of that at centre-half. There's been times where, you know, he's gone Virgil and Matip, and then Virgil, Konate, and then Konate, Matip, obviously, or the other way around slightly. But he's played, you know, three of them twice each across three games in quick succession. And we might start seeing a little bit of that in other areas as well. Look, he'd love Firmino back, wouldn't he? Because that really allows you to go forward into three and stay strong. But Divock Origi is on fire at the moment, isn't he? You know, scoring goals and looking confident. And so I think we'll probably see sort of a little bit of him. But then in midfield as well, I thought Chamberlain, you know, was good again, and is putting enough good performances in a row together now to suggest that, you know, he's back close, you know, to what we want him to be, and is certainly, you know, good enough to be considered a first team player. And so good options, and I'm with you, Neil. I think it wouldn't be surprising if he's planned it all out to make two or three HQ to keep as strong as possible.
There's for me, Rob, the Divock gets a mention there from John, and rightly so. You know, the key KPI is sticking the ball in the back of the net, and he's now 2-2 on sticking the ball in the back of the net. But he was very involved, I thought, against Milan. He was constantly there. And he's such a live threat when he's in that sort of mood. But the other thing that's noticeable with him is there's this very strong commitment that he now plays down the middle. It feels as though that's been the manager's big move. There's not moving Divock around and putting Mane down the middle or something like that. It is that Origi plays centre forward.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of him used on the flanks, haven't we, to just to provide a bit of pace from time to time when one of the other boys is missing. But I think there's maybe a growing appreciation that Divock actually probably holds the ball up as well as anyone in our forward positions. And, you know, especially I think if you're expecting to come under a bit of pressure, an outball is an outball, and a striker who can hold it up for you in a bit of an old-fashioned sense, which Divock can, is an asset. And I think that's why we're seeing that. I think that's why Klopp's accepting it. He's done himself no harm, has he, this season, Divock, with these goals. And I think coming into, you know, African Cup of Nations month, it's just an important sort of turning point in Divock's career, because he's sort of, for the first time, if he can stay fit, and that's a big caveat with Divock, got an opportunity to really push on. to have got to the end of January and got quite a load of starts under his belt. And if he can keep the scoring momentum up, we don't know what, you know, he might be not a million miles off the 10-goal mark, you know, coming into February. Who knows? And that possibly gives his Liverpool career a second wind, as much as putting him in the shop window. You know, let's not forget he's 26 years old. Is that right? That's really young, you know. He could still be a year or two from his peak, especially given the type of forward he's evolving into.
I think Johnny's really helped by the idea that we're getting more from midfield. This can seem like a strange thing to say, but we know he's not going to be as creative a forward as you would expect Firmino. So when your front line is Firmino, Mane and Salah, you bring Origi into that, and it's a bit like, well, where's the swap over there? You lose a little bit of someone else who's going to make something happen for you in a really, the idea of a through ball or a little turn sort of way. But if Thiago and Henderson or Thiago and Chamberlain are playing centre midfield, the idea that you need that false nine to be a creative hub, a creative pivot, it's a little lessened, I think. And I think the more creativity Liverpool have got from midfield, the more they can relax with the idea that the lad who's playing through the middle, he doesn't need to do as much of that. And maybe there's a little bit more of that old style, get the ball up there, knock it back one, because you're knocking it back to a Thiago who can then play a killer pass rather than knocking it back to someone else.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think that is possible, and whatever the changes that Liverpool have made, and I think it's maybe a bit of a change, you know, for Divock as well, seems to be sort of working for him at the moment. And I think those bursts from midfield have been a real feature of our play all season, really. And, you know, I think for the front three as well, it can feel like sometimes where we can sort of mark them out of it. Quite often teams will play three at the back, you know, against us, and which turns into five at the back, you know, to sort of have that extra protection, really. And it can feel like, you know, you can stifle us sort of that way. But if you've got those midfielders breaking, then they need looking after. They need paying attention. If it's a defender going over, then suddenly a forward's got a little bit of space. And Divock certainly, you know, benefits him from that at the moment. And you've seen when he's one-on-one with a defender, you know, he can just spin him and turn him like he does for the Wolves goal at that he's in, you know. So I agree with what everyone said as well about Divock, in the sense that the slight problem he's got and we've got is when we do lose the guys to African Cup of Nations, you've got three fellas who all want to play central, really. So we've got Origi, Jota and Minamino, who are all good players. Yeah, exactly. And Firmino, yeah, who were all good players, but all would all prefer to play in the middle, I think. And that's the four guys you've got. And so someone, you know, is going to have to play a little bit wide, unless we 4-4-2 it, which might be a laugh. But so someone will probably have to play a bit wide, and it might just end up being Divock. But who knows? It's the winter of Divock, isn't it? So he might just be a revelation there too.
The lad who I think has got it toughest, in a sense, in terms of the swapping in and out, Cam, we've seen Shimakas, he can do a really, really strong, you know, left-back role. I'm not even going to say cover role. He brings slightly different things to it, to Robertson, but they're only slightly different. I think Nico Williams looks like a really good attacking fullback, but he's in a bit of a situation where literally the best one in the world and the most unorthodox one in the world is the one he comes in for. So Williams plays really, really well, I think, there against Milan. But unlike in a couple of other areas where you could say, well, you'd swap that one for legs here and there and you wouldn't see that much of a difference, you wouldn't see that much of a join. It's a funny thing to say that almost no matter how well Nico Williams does, and he plays really well against Milan, he's not going to be Kevin De Bruyne playing right back, which is sort of what Trent Alexander-Arnold offers you.
Yeah, that's a thing. I was thinking about that the other day in terms of no matter how good him or Tsimikas are, it just feels as if like they deserve to be getting more game time. And at the end of the day, you've got Robbo and Trent there. It's just a tough situation for them, but I mean, for us, you can't complain because you can always just rely on them a lot. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, when you're saying about Nico and Tsimikas moving forward, that could always be an option. When we were saying then about all them lads wanting to play in the middle going forward, I mean, stranger things have happened in terms of, you know, Tsimikas going forward. So I'm basically,
well, especially Nico Williams, wide
Nico
right.
Williams plays wide right in this game. He ends up right side forward, doesn't he?
Yeah. So you know, going forward, I mean, might he try in the League Cup or the FA Cup games and then see how that goes and then move, because I wouldn't really want to risk in a Premier League game just yet. But you never know, do you? But there are two good options to have, and I think the performances that they've gave in this season, they deserve as much game time as possible.
Other one to talk about, I feel like Chamberlain is now in the first team gang, Rob, full stop. It wouldn't surprise you if he starts either of the next two. Chamberlain at home could be dropped in for either of them. The one who, again, has forced himself into the wider conversations, Morton. I don't think we're quite to the point where we'd expect to see Morton feature for any length of time, at least against Villa or against Newcastle. but you wouldn't be absolutely scandalised if it did just suddenly happen for one reason or another. You wouldn't think, oh no, this is going to become an unmitigated disaster. You'd think, all right, let's see what this lad's got about him in a Premier League game, because he's done it well enough against Porto and against AC Milan.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we'd like to keep dropping him in and giving him minutes in Premier League games, but you kind of don't want that to happen either, because you want people to be fit. And yes, I think there's a lot of good midfielders at Liverpool who I'd really rather be appearing from the bench before more at the moment. Having said that, Leicester in the League Cup is looming. Shrewsbury in the FA Cup is looming. You know, we don't have to be greedy in the game time we require for Tyler Morton at the moment. He's had really quite a lot more this season than I think he would have expected, rewinding to end of last season. An incredible amount, really. So long may our runs continue in the domestic cups is what I would say, rather than wishing for Premier League minutes for him.
Just on that domestic cup point, I think it's for the first time, really, John. It's an interesting sort of maturation of the squad. For the first time, you are in that sort of Man City camp of there being positives to the additional games. And I think in the past, every other season, really, 2020-2021, a bit of a weird exception because it's where the injuries absolutely hit. So that's one of the reasons why. But even in 1920, it didn't feel as though that was quite there. In 1819, I don't think that was quite there, although there was enough depth to get 97 points and win a Champions League. It didn't feel as though you're in the full Man City sort of gear of, well, it's absolutely fine to have a third and fourth round FA Cup game in the same month as the potential for a League Cup semi-final two-legged thing. It's a strange place to be in that it not only is it absolutely fine, but it feels as though it might actually be preferable in terms of getting some of these footballers time playing competitive football.
Yeah, I mean, this League Cup run's been great for us, hasn't it? And I think, look, Klopp's had a lot of criticism for his attitude to domestic cups, really. But I think, you know, he's always been, you know, sort of open to a bit of an adventure in them. There's just the priorities are there, and they're there for other teams as well, you know.
They're there for Man City,
yeah,
even though
exactly,
they win them.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you when you're able to make eight changes and still be strong, that it's fine, isn't it? But when you're not, you know, you sort of get criticised. So I think Jürgen will be enjoying it. I think Jürgen's a winner. He wants to win, you know, everything possible. He just knows what the priorities are, you know, for the supporters and for the ownership, of course. And he wants to see, you know, lads sort of give it a go and kept fresh. And I think as well, draws make a big difference as
course,
well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've, you know, isn't it lovely to get a nice home tie in the FA Cup third round? Do you know what I mean? This time rather than, I don't know, Real Madrid away or something. And so so that's sort of been where we've been at. And so, you know, so we're able to rotate in that. You're able to, you know, rotate maybe the next one if you get another nice draw. And then suddenly, you know, before you know it, you're in the fifth round and you can start sort of, you know, thinking about, oh, do we want to sort of have a real go at this? And so I think the draws for once this season so far have been reasonably favourable to Liverpool as well. And that just allows you to go a little bit longer as well.
Cam, who do you want?
Sporting Lisbon.
Sporting Lisbon?
Yeah, in terms of just the footy and the trip as well. But also, you've got to be looking at the other ties as well. Because, like, you know, there's a potential for Bayern Munich, Chelsea. So, all cancelling out already and stuff. But for me, Sporting Lisbon or Benfica. But yeah, I'll go with Lisbon.
You're just very committed to going to Portugal, Cam, and I like
That's
it.
That's what I was trying to...
You set your stall out.
I was basically getting to that point and I have already planned out a nice little 3 or 4 day trip there in February. So, yeah, Portugal.
Who do you want, Rob?
I'm with Cam all the way there, yeah. There's a 1 in 3 chance that we go to Lisbon, isn't there? I agree, I would prefer Sporting. So just remind me the rest. It's Salzburg. Who is it? It's those two, Salzburg, PSG, and who are the other two?
Inter Milan.
And Villarreal.
And Villarreal. Villarreal or Atalanta, depending on what happens.
Yeah, depending on what happens. Yeah, you definitely... The two Lisbon options by far the best, I think, on balance, in that they're both not very good, and it's a lovely place to go.
Yeah, full house. It's a beautiful city. I'm going to pretend it's going to be warm, even if it's not. And yeah, I know some really nice places to eat. So Lisbon is one of the best cities in the world to eat and drink in.
No love for Salzburg.
I've not been. Those who did, I don't think we're massively having it, to be honest with you. And so there we are. But my friends aren't the most cultured, I'll be honest with you. So don't necessarily listen to them. But Harriet says Salzburg's amazing. So there we are. Booting right off. So there we are. But yeah, now called it. We're going to Portugal, Harriet, we've decided. Leave me alone. Stop bullying me by text.
Yeah, we are. There seems a real commitment to Portugal. I think you want to avoid Paris Saint-Germain, don't you, Rob? Partially from a sporting basis, but also the idea that I think we beat them over two legs, but it become the focus. That's what puts me off. It will be the biggest game in Europe in the whole month. And Liverpool's players and manager, no matter how much they try to act like they wouldn't be thinking about it, they would be thinking about it. It would be an enormous two-legged occasion against Paris Saint-Germain. And I'm fine to have enormous two-legged occasions. Trust me, I want as many of them as possible for Liverpool. But I just quite like them to be in the last eight or the last four. I don't think I want one in the last 16.
No. You end up, it's a big game. And if you get through it, you end up thinking you've virtually won the European Cup, and you wake up in the morning and realise there's still another three tests to go of only equal or better standard. So I'm not into the view that says you've got to beat everyone anyway. No, let's have faced all the bums for as long as possible, all the way. I mean, I'm tracking. I want Sporting, and then I want Lille, who I think could, if they get a bit of a lucky draw in the quarters, and then God knows what fluke in the semi-final could await us after that. If Ajax have gone the distance, all the bums. Paris Saint-Germain would be, in a sporting sense, the worst of the draws for us. But in another sense, it'd be a fantastic draw, in as much as we'd get to go to Paris. And I think even those who don't have tickets should just go to Paris. We should all have a lovely time there. There'd be a lot of it. As you said, it would be the biggest game in Europe in the course of that month. There'd be a lot of subplots, wouldn't there? Like, the one that came to my mind straight away is the Messi gets to go back to Anfield subplot. I couldn't be asked with that, really, amongst the many other things I couldn't be asked with about that draw.
Absolutely not. Anyway, this is Tour Live, so we've got our inserts right now. If you're listening to this as a podcast, if not, we do it as a live thing on YouTube and other platforms. I think that those platforms include Facebook and Twitter, trying to sort of get that, and Twitch. There's been Twitch chat in the past, John. Not fewer Twitchers these days comments.
Don't ask me. I'm very your dad on all this.
Yeah. It's good that that's where you are. So what we'll be doing is that if you are listening to this as the podcast, the inserts will come in now. It isn't that excellent stuff. Thank you for listening to Tour Live. It's a pleasure as ever. Hope whatever you're doing, you're well, and you're looking forward to an exciting Christmas period with the Reds, with us, but also just generally in your lives. And in a wider sense, a friend of the show, we've done some work on his podcast in the past. Very much enjoyed it from a number of places throughout his career. He's got a new book out. It's John Elledge, and this insert will start with me talking to John in a London beer garden much earlier in the year, back when it was sunny and everything, you could sit outside and relax. So it'll be me and John, and then it'll be John Gibbons with Becky Loy and Jabeda Katun from Blackfest. They're having a chat too, so there'll be those two inserts back to back, but I say back to back, dropped in the middle, it'll be me and John Gibbons talking about Beer 52. There's so much to look forward to in this little section, but it is as ever a pleasure to speak to John Elledge.
So you may well know John Elledge from the New Statesman or from City Metric or from his other sort of general work. John has been sort of knocking around. He's been a friend to the Anfield Rap down the years. He has written some really interesting political stuff. He's come off very much from my position as being on the soft left. I cannot believe he has written the ultimate capitalist Christmas book. But this is what you've done, John. You have written everyone's Christmas book. The compendium of not quite everything is something we should be getting all of our dads.
That's very much the plan. If this comes off, it is like the thing people buy for their aging male relatives about 20 past 8 on December 23rd. That's the goal.
I cannot get over it. Honestly, it's almost like the things you get at the counter at Urban Outfitters. That's the level we're at here of sheer literary cynicism. I mean, I'm going to go and say the thing's good, don't you worry, but I am overwhelmed. I didn't see it coming from you. Honestly, Stephen Bush all fucking day.
I'm knocking on a bit now. I want some money. I want to sell out. I've been trying to sell out for years, but no one's bloody buying. But I just want a nice bestseller and then to never have to work again. Is that too much to ask for?
It is definitely what you've gone for. So to put this book in context for you, John starts it at the beginning of time, which is a bold move. Mostly pulled off by Bibles and equivalent sort of.
Yeah, there's a lot of creation myths in there. There's an ancient Egyptian one where a guy knocks one out.
Yes.
And thus creates the universe, which is a particular favourite of mine.
I enjoyed the fact that you then said that they tried to then rewrite it and said it was sneezing. Yeah. Which did not feel like a PG version.
Well, that's the problem, is like a lot of this stuff, and bearing in mind I'm going through like so many subjects here, which I'm not an expert in.
Oh, it is nearly everything, and you're an expert on nothing.
I mean, that's what I know nothing about anyway. But yeah, it's like it was very unclear to me looking at that part whether there was an attempt to clean that myth up later, or whether it was actually an attempt to dirty it up later and make it more interesting. And like half the fun of a book like this is the things that it turns out you think we know and we don't. Well, and it's much more complicated than you thought it would be.
Well, that's the journey that the whole book goes through. It sort of, it moves this way and that. It flits. You start absolutely enormous at creation, then you go arguably bigger into space, but more factual, it's fair to say. And then from there, you come back onto the Earth, and you just manoeuvre your way through your many topics all the way through. Like, did you have a lot of fun? It reads like you were having fun. Tell me you're having fun.
God, yeah. No, it's like, so I'm in the last stages of another book now, which has to be much more structured, partially because it's co-write, but also because it has an actual topic.
Yeah.
This one, the great thing about doing something like the compendium is if, like, you get, like, 2 hours into working on something, you think, actually, I'm not very interested in this, or I can't find the crucial bit of information, you just drop it, and you just do something else. So I have a whole spreadsheet full of, like, entries that never made it. Like, you were telling me how much you've read beforehand, so I don't even made it as far as this, but there's a miscellaneous chapter.
I haven't got to miscellaneous.
The back, in which there's a miscellaneous entry, which is just observations I have for posts I never finished, but for, well, this is a really interesting fact, I'll create a place just to put it in.
That's honestly the absolute, genuinely, I cannot get over this book. When I saw it and saw that you'd written, I thought, oh, there'll be something else that's going on in here. But it reminds me of, and again, I mean this with the greatest of respect, I was given, when I was about 8 years old, the Boy's Handbook of Everything. And it reminds me of that. Like, you name it, it is in there. I've sort of clattered through. I've not checked things, if you know what I mean, but I've sort of gone, oh, yeah, that's probably right about Egypt. That's a bit crackers. And then, I feel as though you're going to damn it with faint praise. I'll say something else about it that will feel like I'm damning it with faint praise, but I'm not. I am talking it up. It is a great toilet book. It's got it all.
one of the more excruciating bits of writing a book, as it turns out, you have to get in contact with anyone remotely influential you've ever met and ask if they'd like to give you two nice sentences on the book.
Thinking
about it now makes me want to die. But someone who I worked with, my former boss, Helen Lewis, who I worked with for many years, the quote she gave was basically like, it's the ideal toilet book. So don't you, you're not insulting me. You are, I think, at least the fifth person who said that. This is the market. I was going for, like, slightly superior, like a kind of toilet book that makes you feel like you're learning something and improving yourself while taking a shit.
Some will say a New Statesman toilet book, but we'll come back around.
Well, yeah, that'll do.
So you've got a second, you've got another book coming soon, which I'm not going to ask you specifically what it's about, but you, therefore, is this something you're going to want to do more of, in all seriousness? I mean, firstly, if this goes well, I'm sure they'll want you to do a second compendium of almost everything. And as I say, I think it should go well, genuinely, do buy it for elderly loved ones, which is an awful sentence.
Or Christmas. Curious children.
Yeah, either direction. I'd say 13 plus maybe on the children, but they'll love it. 13 to 16 will love it.
I'd love to do more, because it was enormous fun to write, and it kind of kept me sane during the dark days of lockdown one.
Is that when you did it?
Yeah, basically. So I got the I got the commission in January 2020.
Okay.
And left the...
It was perfect timing, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I left the New Statesman in January as well. So it really was ideal timing to sit down and write. And then I was just stuck indoors and nothing but an internet connection. and to be fair, you know, the love of a good woman, so I can't complain too much. But you know, the two of us were stuck indoors with my internet connection and no other human contact.
Company, John, I bet you were shouting things through. I bet it was a nightmare.
Oh, God, yeah. But like, I've chosen well for someone who will enjoy that sort of thing. And occasionally would just like text me things like, did you know that most insects are deaf? Was something she genuinely texted me the other day. So, you know, it's a, you know, match made in heaven.
It sounds as though it is. So the book is out now. Who's it with?
It's with, I have to get, it's all these, publishing is all nested companies. I think the imprint is Wildfire,
okay,
which is part of Headline, which was part of the Hachette Group. I think it goes in that order.
Okay.
But it's I can't remember which one it actually says Headline. It's on all the usual places.
It's in all the bookshops.
If you wander into a Waterstones or look on Amazon, it's there.
It's there. Or, as I always encourage, have a go at Hive. They like the local bookshops. So give them a go as well, if you can. So it is the compendium of nearly everything. Give us your favourite one.
Oh, God. Well, okay. I don't know if it's my favourite one. It's not quite everything, by the way. I feel the need to correct. Terrible need to correct. Nearly. Compendium of not quite everything. It's nearly the compendium of not. Anyway, I don't know if it's my favourite, but like one of them I really did enjoy researching, which I'm bringing up because of the topic of this fine podcast, is there is one in there which I don't think you've got to yet on the World Cup.
No, go on.
It's just like a list of things I found interesting about the, like, because I've never been, I'm not a football guy. I got very into the Euros this year, as did we all, but I've not historically been someone who's been that into football after having discovered at school that I was rubbish at it.
We all are.
But yeah, I kind of find these major sporting tournaments kind of interesting from sort of geopolitics level. So do you know the reason why the 1938 World Cup only had 15 teams in it?
No, I don't. In all seriousness, I don't.
Anschluss.
Wow, okay.
Because Austria was meant to be playing independently, but unfortunately got swallowed by the Nazis, possibly against its own will, possibly they were quite in favour of it. That's up for debate. So there was the combined Greater Germany team, which Austria's star player, Matthias Sindelar, refused to play in and was mysteriously found dead in 1939.
Okay.
And there have been all sorts of conspiracy theories about that. So, yeah, that's...
I don't think they're conspiracy theories, are they? Let's be honest.
I don't know. Like, okay, again, like this is, I've just reread my like two paragraph summary of this. I can't remember the original sources I read. As I understand it, it was probably like he probably died of carbon monoxide poisoning because he was living in a cheap flat.
Okay.
So it is one of those things that is a perfectly plausible cause of death, but it is also quite a clever way of knocking somebody off, and history doesn't record.
On the other hand,
yeah.
Get hold of the book. Get hold of the book for yourself. Get hold of the book for anyone that you know. It is a splendid, splendid present. Honestly, it is. Enjoy it immensely and have a lovely Christmas with it. I mean, it's a way off, but still nonetheless.
Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons for you for a second. What are you up to in your presents?
I'm not sure. I had a little think about this before. I need to assess. I need to get everything out, think about everyone. I think I've got one or two more than I think when I'm going to sort of lay it out, but I'd like to be in a better position.
So you feel like you're behind?
A little bit, yeah.
Do you know what might help you?
Go on.
Getting beer delivered. Because sorting the booze run around Christmas, what's in, what's not in, all that sort of stuff, it is a complex thing.
That's it. I mean, the presents is just one of many tasks that we all have around Christmas. So if we could get that beer nailed, and especially a variety of beer that I can impress guests with, that will be a weight off my mind. You are right, Neil.
It will be a weight off your mind. And as ever, we are partnering with Beer 52, who help with that sort of thing. They are offering listeners 10 free beers. If you go to beer52.com/wrap, I lost the ability to read there, and you cover the postage at £5.95, which I would say is just worth your time of not having to pop out, you can get to claim the free case. And if you do it before the 17th of December, there's two extra. The Beer 52 thing, listen, you can select between light and dark. If the dark beer is not your thing, you can just choose the light option. And it is genuinely useful. I've got a couple of boxes backed up for this purpose, so when people come around Christmas, one of them where you just leave it outside. Let outside be the fridge as well. It's got all the hits. It can just sit in the box outside. It can sit in the garage outside. It stays cool. And then you've got it ready to go.
Yeah, and there's no sort of worrying about, oh, what does this person like or what do they like? There's something for everyone in the box as well, and you can impress people with a bit of adventures. And it's always nice to drink something different at Christmas, isn't it?
It is indeed, because it can be relentless otherwise.
So, yeah, variation being the key here. So, yeah, impress all your friends and all that. Get stuck in.
Yep, they send experts around the globe to find the best beer available anywhere. Each month, members receive a new case, and members have had beer from more than 40 countries across 5 continents. It says here, I'm now trying to sort of count the 5 continents, Europe, Asia, Africa.
North and South America.
North and South America, maybe. Where's Australia fitting into this? Is there an Antarctic brewery they're not telling us about? We need to know. You'll get Ferment magazine and you'll get delicious snacks to go with the beer as well. After you redeem the first case, you'll join the monthly beer club. No minimum commitments. You can pause or cancel at any time. It's at £24 per month. So it's beer52. It's written, it's the numbers 5, beer52.com/wrap. Cover the postage for £5.95. Get the beers, get the convenience of it all, but more than anything else, get the fact that it's a really good product. Me and John both do actually get it in our real lives.
And it is John Gibbons, Four Tall Alive. I'm delighted to be talking about something exciting, which is happening in our city next weekend. And to do that, I've got Jabida, who's the artistic director at Blackfest, and an old friend, Becky Loy, who's come on as well. First of all, Becky, how are you? It's been ages since I've seen you.
And I'm all right. I'm just recovered from the long COVID and all that stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it is nice to see you. A few people might remember Becky was a and hopefully still is a subscriber. Hopefully still going to come out and do some stuff in the future. But you're coming on to something else, Rebecca. It's a gig that's happening next Saturday. If you don't mind, if you tell us a little bit about why you're putting this on, first of all. And, you know, obviously it's you want people to sort of have a great time and see these amazing artists, but there's obviously something very important to you that you're looking to raise money and awareness for.
Yeah, so I'll leave Jubs to tell you a bit more about the artist, but obviously it's going to be an amazing gig. It's going to be just amazing live music from fantastic artists all over Liverpool. But the reason why I wanted to do this event is because I wanted to raise awareness for sickle cell disease. So sickle cell disease is a chronic blood disease, and it's actually so bad that people who have sickle cell disease are usually treated by blood cancer doctors. It's that kind of level of just seriousness. But the issue is that in the UK, there is not enough medical awareness, so among medical staff, as well as among the general population. So it mainly is within the BAME community, and there's things like sickle cell or thalassemia. Thalassemia tends to be more prevalent in Mediterranean people and in Asian people as well. But because there's a lack of awareness, there's a lot of people who are dying, really, who shouldn't die. Just because there's a lack of awareness, there's a lack of research done. And there's been a recent study that's came out by, you know, the Across Parliament party, like all the politicians who work together. There's a recent study come out saying more or less the same thing, that we need more research, we need more medical awareness, and we need more focus put on this so that people who are 35, like my sister was, don't die so young. So obviously my sister passed away from it. I'm a thalassemia carrier because I've got Asian blood in my family. And my mother, my sister, they're all sickle cell carriers as well. And if you have a relationship with someone and they have the same thing, then you can pass the full-blown thing on to your children, which can just be devastating.
So I mean it's a terrible thing, and it's obviously happened to you, but obviously happened to lots of people you know in this country. And it's good that you know, that it sounds like politicians are starting to take this seriously and starting to sort of look at, you know, well, why is this happening? Would you say it feels like it's taken a little bit too long to sort of, you know, look at this as a serious thing?
I'd say so. I'll just get a very short story that what happened last year is basically in the cold weather, and it's the reason why we want to do the winter white party where everyone wears white, is we want to represent winter time, which is the worst time for sickle cell sufferers, like cold weather, because it stops the blood from being able to pass through their joints, and that's when these crises happen of extreme pain and your blood's not getting to your organs, and it can really just escalate into madness really quickly. And we all went last year for my sister's birthday, which is like 2 weeks, in 2 weeks time today. We all went to the Lake District, did a lovely hike, had a great time, but a sudden storm happened, a bit like today, when we were on, Old Man of Coniston, and it sent her into a sickle cell crisis, and it was so bad. And the thing is, there's a hospital in Barrow, a big, massive hospital. But between my mum, my sister and myself, we all decided that it was actually safer to drive 2 hours back to Liverpool, where we know there's specialist care, where people understand sickle cell, because there's been so many instances where you go to the hospital and they don't know what it is, and they need notes and they need this and they need that. And someone with sickle cell needs to go straight on morphine and like high doses of morphine straight away if they're in crisis. And so it was actually safer to drive 2 hours with someone who could have the blood being starved from their organs. We found it safer to drive back to Liverpool than to chance the hospital. And they're the life, those little differences that can be between life and death, that just shouldn't happen.
No, absolutely. So Winterfest then is happening a week on Saturday the 18th of December with Blackfest. And Jabida, there's the lineup you've put up for this. Tell us more about it and what people can expect on the night.
Yeah, so it's going to be happening at District, and obviously as an organisation as well, we want to be supporting causes like this, particularly Rebecca's case, a sister from the community that we didn't really need to lose. And obviously it's just been a huge shock to the community, and we definitely don't want this to happen again. And we want to be able to tell people about this new treatment. As much as it's going to be absolutely all singing, dancing kind of event, we also want to raise the seriousness about what's going on. Hopefully me and Rebecca will be looking at more campaigns to raise more awareness in the future. But just for this, we've got lots of lovely acts for people to look forward to. And all, as Rebecca said, it's an all winter white party, and the best dress is going to get a little something from us. So please dress the best you can, all in white. And it's Saturday, the 18th of December at District. We've got Rayleigh's Caribbean food truck that's coming on, and we've got the most amazing, extremely talented local Merseyside artist. And it's going to be a very bluesy, jazzy vibe. And we've got live acts like Amik and the Ex-Amik. We've got, obviously, Wavertree Gospel Choir, because we want to add that kind of spirituality in there. We've got I Am Kayami. Nee Maxine, again, Nee Maxine, she does neo jazz soul kind of mute vibes. Remy, Sorrell, Shaq Omar, DJ Shanice, a young female DJ as well, which we want to also support our artists that are young. Tyrone Lewis, who did a performance for Liverpool City Region's Culture and Creativity Awards last year. So it's absolutely amazing lineup and food. We'll be doing lots of like raising money as well, and kind of do lots of kind of gifts and stuff like that, that people can actually do a little auction of, and really just talk about what this disease can do for families, and try and save more people from this fate that obviously has been very tragic for us to lose lovely soul like Naomi. And we don't want that for our community. We want to raise that awareness as well. So it's going to be amazing. I do want a lot of people to come, support this important cause, and support Naomi, and particularly Rebecca's fundraiser. If you can't make the event, please, please go on Rebecca's fundraiser page and give something little, because it will be going to the hemoglobin unit in the Royal, and we will be giving it to independent charities as well as a national sickle cell charity, the monies from what we make from this charity event.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, obviously you guys have come together for sort of for this event, but if you could tell us a little bit more about Blackfest, because obviously it's much sort of wider sort of than this night. So if people have not heard of you guys before, you know, what are you getting up to, you know, throughout the year?
Blackfest, we're a grassroots Black Arts Festival, and obviously we love to support Black arts and culture and creativity. We want to develop platform and support our communities where we can through arts, to arts inclusion, social inclusion, even if we're furthering people into training, employment. We do projects throughout the year. At the moment, we're doing an Empowering Women's project. There's still more spaces available if people want to take part. It's Mondays and Tuesdays, 10 to 1. Please get in touch with blackfestcreatives@gmail.com. We would run a whole festival at the end of September where we do music, we do theatre, we do, it's not coming to me, film, visual arts. We are in most of the arts institutions. So we've got support from Blue Coat. We've got support from FACT, lots of other kind of Unity Theatre, Everyman. We work with our institutions and our communities and artists to see how we can collaborate and things like that. So we are still grassroots, so we are still looking for a lot of support ourselves. And we want to continue to support amazing causes like this as well going forward. And we do, you know, with this year, Blackfest have done a retreat to support people with Black, you know, mental health. Because obviously we've gone through COVID as a community, haven't we? A global community. And we created that safe space for people to kind of just wind down and just connect with nature and earth. And really claiming back ourselves and our souls and our sanity more than anything. And it's these are the things that Blackfest do. Our work is really, really centered around healing and kind of things like that. And also platforming amazing talent and developing our talent. Also showcasing them and showing a way away from obviously other pathways into creativity and try and help the artists to kind of get to a bigger platform. And hopefully, you know, we can showcase more music. And Liverpool's talent within the black diaspora is beautiful. Like, I just can't even pick. There's just so much, and there needs to be more done as a city to support the creatives. As a city, there needs to be a sustainability within our infrastructure. We're trying to support that.
It's incredible. And for you, Rebecca, to link up with someone like Blackfest for this event, you must be absolutely thrilled, because, you know, it's hard to know where to start with something like this. But for you to, you know, join up with these guys who are doing it all the time and throwing this, you know, amazing event in memory of Naomi, but also, you know, obviously for the great cause, you know, you must be delighted.
It absolutely is. And actually, just to talk to him, without getting emotional, like, the within a week of my sister passing away, Jubs was doing mental health events at the time. Stabida was doing a mental health events at the time, and she sent my whole family, all the girls, to a spa. We went to the retreat day. One mess. It's not just been, you know, from the point of view of she's willing to collaborate with me now and be really helpful now, but she's just supported my whole family through this time. I've lived it before I've got involved on the other side of it. And I'm so excited for this event, because although, you know, the reason and the cause behind it is a serious one and an important one, it's also going to be a very Christmassy party. And, you know, the choir are going to do some Christmas songs as well. And it's an opportunity, if there's a work party and they can't find a space to come and have their work do, like, get everyone there. There's going to be, like, amazing Caribbean food. We're going to have Omi have given us some afternoon tea for a prize. We've got bespoke cakes. There's going to be so much that is going to make it such a fun event as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone should get behind it, John. Everyone, the whole city. You know, yeah, as much as this disease affects Black and African Caribbean communities, everybody needs to be aware. Like, obviously, Rebecca highlighted, some hospitals don't know how to deal with sickle cell carriers. So I think there needs to be a wider awareness within many communities and break down those barriers. So we're all aware that, what do we do when someone's got a sickle cell or something? How do we respond to that person? And I think those are the things that we want to bring forward, as well as an amazing night and all the Christmassy vibes and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Saturday the 18th of December from 7 p.m. Tickets are £15. It's the District in Liverpool's Baltic area. If you want more information, www.blackfest.co.uk, www.blackfest.co.uk. We'll tweet out the links as well. But yeah, have a wonderful evening, and I hope it's really successful, and I hope you raise loads. But thanks so much for coming
on.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to Tour Live this week. Let's get back over there with Cam, with Rob, and with John. And we're back, and we're talking about Aston Villa with Cam Rimmer and Rob Gutman, John Gibbons with me as well. Cam, Steven Gerrard right now is, with the greatest of love and respect, absolutely irrelevant to my life. There is one thing that is relevant to my life, and it's three more points to Liverpool. There'll be a lot of determination to talk about Steven in a lot of different ways. I think he himself wants one thing and one thing only, and that's 3 points as well. I think the remembering how good it is to beat your mates at anything is an important thing that needs to happen here. And I very much want to see Steven Gerrard on the end of a Liverpudlian hiding.
Yeah, same. I mean, I could talk about Steven Gerrard all day, to be honest, but I just want to dismiss it, as like you've just been saying before we came on the show. If Gerrard wasn't there and it was somebody else, it'd literally just be your standard 3 o'clock Saturday home game, I think, wouldn't it? But instead, now there's this whole big narrative coming out about it. But yeah, I think we just need to treat it just as a normal game as much as possible. I know the media are going to try and build her up, but for me, it just needs to be like the Southampton game, where it's won by half time and you're already on to the next one. Because we've seen it last week when we had to dig right till the end at Wolves. It's the games before that where you can rest and reserve the energy. Then it's going to be a game down the road where you'll come a bit unstuck. And with this Christmas period coming up, just give the points, give Gerrard an applause at the start, and then that's it. Just move on.
I want a bit more than the applause at the start, John. What I want is the somewhat stomach churning, toe curling, we're singing Steven's name on 84 because the Reds are 4-0 up and we feel really magnanimous and we're really smug about it. That's what I want in terms of letting on to Gerrard. And he's got to keep his head down because he's coaching Aston Villa, and he's also really annoyed because he's getting beat 4-0. This is the state of affairs I am about here. That's the context in which I want to sing Steven Gerrard's name, no other one.
I mean, I've never known you want to beat a Steve so much since I watched you play Graves at Poole. but in a similar sort of way, you seem to want to beat both as patronisingly magnanimous in win. Well done, mate. You did really well for a long time. You were right in that game right till the end.
Till 43. Until I battered you. Yeah. So 43, you were all over it, Stephen. That's what I want to say. So about 43, and then we went 1-0 up, and then it was 3-0 by 60. This is my
honestly, the amount of times I've had this pint is unreal. In some sort of in Boston Pool Loft, you know, it was absolutely crazy. But yeah, that's the dream, isn't it? You know, he comes, we give him a nice clap, we batter Aston Villa, and we get to sort of, you know, give him a big clap at the end. And that's the sort of ideal situation. And also, I would argue the most likely situation, because although they've done well since he's took off, It's three wins. It's three battling wins against teams who are already half a football team compared to the boys in red. And so I think, you know, although they gave City a decent game, I think Liverpool are going to be right on it. You know, so many players have had a big break, more pool action since the last sort of league game. So I think they're going to be absolutely ready to go.
I'll come back to you, John. You've done stuff on our subscription stuff, talking to Rangers supporters whilst Gerrard was there a lot of the time. And the thing that he's been good at, that he was genuinely very, very good at Rangers. Now, he was doing it from the position of being the first or second best team in the league. But the thing he was very, very good at was stopping the opposition. That was really weirdly, it wouldn't be what you'd necessarily expect, but he was very, very structured, and they would limit the opposition's number of chances, but also especially quality of chances. And that's the thing that I think I've got my eye on. And he managed to do that relatively well against Manchester City.
Well, his reputation actually as a manager of Rangers sort of came first for the European run, didn't it?
Yeah.
And they did a couple of years ago, so the year before they won the league, they did really well in the Europa League and beat some teams who, you know, they had sort of no right to really, and hadn't for a while. You know, Rangers hadn't really done sort of much in Europe until, from the final that they got to quite a few sort of number of years ago, really. So the Rangers fans you spoke to were sort of most impressed by that. And as you say, Neil, that sort of might surprise a few people who expect Gerrard, the player, to sort of be into the manager and it to be sort of about, you know, motivation and attacking football and sort of, you know, full throttle stuff. Whereas actually, you know, he's very thoughtful. You know, he'll come with a tactical plan at Anfield, yep. But we've seen plenty of teams come with good tactical plans before, and then Mo Salah dances around three of you, and so, you know, I think they'll be tough to beat, and I think they'll be up for it, and they're motivated and they're confident at the moment. But I just think we're flying so high at the moment, and we're so determined. We've got a steel in our eyes at the moment, really. I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon.
The steel, I think, Rob, has come more and more to the fore. I think across since post West Ham, Liverpool do appear to have something that's a little bit steelier. I think they'll have been a little rattled by what went on at West Ham, and you can go one or two ways when you're rattled. You can go back into your shell, or you can do what Liverpool have done, which is absolutely stick the chest out. And that's what I'm seeing at the moment. I think we're getting closer and closer to a hybrid of this exceptionally attacking football with the grinding winning machine that we saw in 1920 that was second to none. If that can continue with another win, if that can continue all the way into Christmas, you know, we're talking here about Villa, then Newcastle, maybe the Tottenham game, but they've got an enormous amount of issues at the moment. And then we're into the genuine chunk of the Christmas period. Three wins from the next three, and that table will be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, look, we've seen this pattern for the last, every year on the clock, I think, without exception, that he seems to prime his squads to be peaking around now, certainly in the first half of the season. This is the key phase, when the games are coming very, very concertina together, that he wants to get them into a certain rhythm to keep them really at a boil, if you like. Having said that, against West Ham, it felt a game too far in a certain sense, so that he'd retained the same side. This week he's done something different. Now there will be probably nine changes from the team that beat AC Milan. The two that possibly don't change are arguably our two best players, so that's interesting.
And the goalkeeper.
And the goalkeeper, true. But you know what? With a rested supporting cast, hopefully that's not such an issue. I just want to say on the Gerrard situation for Saturday and Saturday only, he's dead to me. I'm likely to boo him than sing his name. you know, it's just one of them. I don't want to see any sentimentality around that. You're right. We have games to win. We're on an incredible run of six straight wins. These are the kind of fixtures you want to build runs. Yes, Aston Villa will be a test for us. They are better than Newcastle, who we'll face next week, or Southampton, who we faced the other week. And they're probably better than Wolves as well, even though Wolves have beaten them this season, I think. Yeah, they have. So there is a sort of test, but they shouldn't be testing a Liverpool run, really. These are the kind of fixtures. Even Tottenham away next week, I'm going to put into that category. That's a game I think we should win, and I think we will win. These are the kind of fixtures where you build on really, really strong runs that win leagues. So I think the determination to accept nothing but victory will see Liverpool over the line again.
In the comments there, RosterMonkey99, Red Balloons lad, says, Neil, you say watch City for the run because we've got to match them. They're five games winning. We're four in. Is this starting now to the end of the season, Cam? I feel as though it might be. I think there's every chance that we're sitting here prior to the game against Leeds, say, and we're saying, all right, well, now we're sitting on seven. And they're sitting on eight. And then, you know, getting all the way through to when we face Chelsea or when they face Chelsea, and we're saying, right, it's now, these are sides that are now 9-9 or 10-10. It feels like someone's just turned a lever, pulled a lever, and there's a thing now that's happening that we've seen before. We could be proven wrong. Both could drop points this weekend. I didn't think Chelsea had dropped points to West Ham last weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, I think both have got one in them somewhere at some point. But there's a flip side, which is that there's having one in you. There's the idea that you might throw double six and find yourself in a bit of trouble. But, you know, if you don't throw double six, there's a lot of other things to throw. And at the minute, that's where Liverpool and City look to me. I think something's got to go badly wrong to see either of them dropping points at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've said on a couple of shows and other people have said as well, it feels as if like us or City we've got in them to go 10 games winning all of them in a row. But I just feel as if us and City, since the turn of the last international break, we've kind of showed our experiences from the 18-19 season where you're just winning every single week. And I was just starting to, and both teams seem to be both doing it like a bit quietly. No one's really still speaking about it. It still seems to be a bit more about Chelsea and what they're doing for some reason, even though us and City have proved it the last few years. But yeah, I think now us and City are just going to go off on one. It's just going to be the next couple of months are going to be quite nerve-wracking. But yeah, I think for this Christmas period, I think us and City would not be surprised. We've both come out with maximum points, and then the table after Christmas will just, it's us or City then, isn't it?
That's where I think we end up, Rob. And the phase of this is, you said before about the changes. I'll say you're a team and you'll tell me if you disagree with any of the names as I'm going through them. Alisson in goal, Trent, Robbo, Virgil, Matip. And then ahead of that, you're going to end up with Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Salah, Mané, Jota. Are we all as one on that being the team? John's nodding. Rob?
Yeah, barring it, there's been any injuries, but yeah, 100% it's that.
You know, he might decide to do Konate back-to-back off the fact that he plays ever so well on Tuesday. Do you think that might be in his mind to think, I might give him this one again and then bring Matip back in for Newcastle? Or do you think he just goes with Matip?
I think he'll take Villa. He'll see Villa as the bigger test than Newcastle. So I think if he's feeling like he needs to give Konate some extra love, I think Newcastle's the one. Are we undone by set pieces against Newcastle a bit last season? Maybe a little bit.
Missed chances more, really.
Scrambles in the box. I don't know. You know, Matip's had his rest. I think he's got to manage Matip's minutes over this Christmas period, hasn't he? So, one in one. Matip's had a week off now. So, I think bringing him back in for Villa makes sense. And then taking him back out for Newcastle makes sense. Bringing him back in for Tottenham, therefore, makes sense. Leicester, and so on. So, the rhythm is you bring Matip in this.
And you look to start Gomez against Leicester.
In the League Cup, 100%, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that's looming as an interesting week, that one, isn't it? Because he's, especially for Salah and Mane, who he's given no time off apart from sort of late in the game the other night, that is the week where sports science and him will be totally aligned and they go, you just do not go anywhere near that game.
Cam, do you think that'll be the side? Do you think there'll be any sort of question marks around Konate? Maybe given a, you know, I think Chamberlain, I'd like to think, gets one of the next two as a start. I just don't think it's Villa. I think it's Henderson for Villa.
Yeah, I think that as well. But I think Chamberlain definitely does deserve to go back in for the game after. But I think Klopp will probably sit down with, there's going to be what the core 18, 19 is going to say. Yous are all going to be playing some part over this Christmas period. So don't be disappointed, like, you know, to your Chamberlains or your Canates if they're not in on Saturday, because you'll be in next Thursday, or even you'll be in at Spurs as well, you know, the Sunday after. So, yeah, I think everybody will be getting a lot of game time. But, yeah, I think that team that you've just said there, that'd be my prediction.
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll go strong, you know, in this one, obviously, and that team is, I think, the one he'll go for. And then the Newcastle. The interesting, obviously, little subplot, I guess, to use that word again, is we're not really sure what's going on with Tottenham yet. And so I don't think he can plan to sort it too far. I think by Tuesday or Wednesday next week, we should have a fair idea whether that game's going to be on or not. But obviously, you know, their sort of COVID list seems to be growing all the time, really. And so you'd be disappointed to sort of rotate too heavily ahead of something that then sort of doesn't happen. But I think this one, you know, especially with none of the midfielders we've just mentioned starting in the week, you'd be really, really surprised if they didn't all start this. Then Newcastle, you know, should it be look like Spurs happening? Then you're looking at probably, you know, Chamberlain, Tsimikas and Konate maybe coming in and those three, so and giving a bit of a rest, and then looking to go more or less the same team. I think the Spurs will be more or less his plan, but you know, he's got his own plans and he probably doesn't listen to me.
I mean, I'd like to hope not. To any of us, John, that's not me picking on you. Was it absolutely any of us? He will have his own plans. Cam, prediction?
First, Saturday, I'm going to go 4-0 just to upset Rob. I think Gerrard will get an applause at the start of the game. So I mean, there's going to be all the boom, but yeah, 4-0.
4-0. John?
I think 3-0. Not quite as confident as Cam, but confidence in the Reds. And I think we'll, you know, we maybe see it dwindle off towards the end with a busy schedule ahead of us, as has been the case a little bit recently. So good 3-0 Liverpool.
Rob?
I think we'll win 2-0. Let's say that.
Okay, win 2-0. I have a little eye on Liverpool 3, Aston Villa 1. That's what I'm expecting, with maybe a slightly later third goal than John's suggested there, but Liverpool always feeling as though they're just in control of it. I think Ollie Watkins is difficult for us, to be honest, and it's not just off the 7-2. I think in general he does a lot of things that we sort of, that he's good at coming outside to win, and he's good at running channels, and he's good at helping us get pinned back. So I think he's a difficult player for us.
Yeah, he's been doing a bit wide left though, hasn't he? So whether he sort of ends up getting dragged into defensive work, I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Absolutely.
That's how brave they are.
Absolutely. Claudette's comments is perfectly fair. Gerrard is the same as Dalglish going to Blackburn. Respect the legend and the opponents. Absolutely. But get the 3 points. Get the 3 points. That is the only thing that matters. And Steven Gerrard would understand that more than you could ever conceive of. The nature of the fact that he is Steven Gerrard means he knows that only one thing matters. And the one thing that matters is Liverpool winning. Thank you very much to all of our inserts, to John, to Cam, and to Rob. We'll see you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.